All right, I want to tell you about Brain FM. Some days, our focus is stretched thin. Different sources of stimulation regularly wear on our attention. Working from home can obviously exacerbate these issues. At best, curated playlists can be a crapshoot. Whether they'll actually push you to be more productive, who knows? This is why we use Brain FM. These guys have neural phase locking audio technology and fire soundtracks that shift your neurons into focus mode. Visit brainfm.com. That's www.brainfm.com. Use the promo code DIRECTIMPACT for great discounts. That's Direct Impact with no spaces. Now, visit the link in our show notes. Welcome to Direct Impact, where we discuss the various ways our mental health and quality of life intersect. I'm your host, Andrea Epstein, licensed professional counselor, master's addictions counselor, and certified sex therapist. Think of our time together as focused self-reflection mixed with insight, passion, and empowerment. Now, take a deep breath. Now let's dive in and see what impacts you today. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Andrea Epting, and you're listening to the Direct Impact Podcast. I wanted to introduce you guys to part two of our candid conversation with some of our betrayed partners who have been so vulnerable and willing to come on and process a little bit and share a little bit of their story. So in part one, our partners discussed introductions, a little bit about their discovery, and also went in to share about the benefits of a community, the benefits of group process, in a way to understand what has happened to them and to get in touch with their feelings and emotions regarding betrayal trauma. So if you haven't listened to part one, please go back and do so at your convenience and enjoy the show. Do you feel it is important post-discovery to receive help in processing all of what has happened?
Well, I think, the primary thing is you cannot do this on your own. And I think many of the people who, I call myself a chump, you know, I'm very chump-like and over-giving and over-helping and, you know, you aren't used to asking for help or needing it, really. But you cannot do this on your own. This is too big. It is too foundational a betrayal of everything to try to put the pieces together yourself. And I think that, you know, when I first found out, my husband was sort of whisked away for therapy and I was just there on my own. And I kind of felt like there was a terrible car accident and, you know, my husband got whisked away in the ambulance for treatment and I was just there by the side of the road, you know, and I was too wounded to know that I even needed help, you know, and I just kind of staggered around like a zombie. And so I think you don't even, you're so traumatized and wounded that you don't even know that you're like, you know, that your limbs are falling off and you're bleeding and you're burnt black by soot and the explosion has damaged you. You don't even know that. Mm-hmm. At least I didn't, you know, and you need help desperately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know that I'm biased here, but I would say you need just as much help. 50-50. You need just as much help as the recovering addict or, you know, the identified addict needs. Because the damage has been done to you in that relationship for the entirety of your relationship in most cases.
Yeah.
You know, to your point earlier, it's like it didn't just happen all at once. It's happened over 25 years. And but so it is important.
I would almost say you would need more help than the addict.
Okay. Don't
I mean, because the addict, as they practice, they already have a support system, even as they're practicing their addiction, and they're not judged or seen any different, but the betrayed person has had their support system alienated, or they've had it separated from the person. And so they are even more alone. and don't have access to a support system or even the working capacity of maybe finding help. I mean, as in my situation, it affected me physically. I was depressed, and like I said before, I couldn't get up. But also, a situation opened memories to my childhood trauma, which I hadn't remembered. So it opens. I started having symptoms of PTSD, where my teeth chatter. I stopped eating, but I gained a lot of weight because it stopped my metabolism. I started having panic attacks in my sleep. I would wake up amidst that. So then, since that, then that caused me to be afraid to fall asleep, so I wasn't sleeping. So it was obvious something's wrong, but I didn't realize how big a problem it was. And it wasn't my feelings that as much as my body was telling me in other ways. It was coming out in other ways. And it's sad, but that was one of a kind of an eye-opener after the fact. I am very thankful that my family, my parents, especially my mom, she was the first to get go into recovery for alcohol addiction, and it caused a chain effect. And by seeing them going to treatment and therapy for their addiction, I knew that there was treatment centers out there. I knew that there was help, and so I was thankful that I asked about that because I knew I was in a situation that I never wanted to feel like that. And so, and that was I was thankful for, and that I knew about therapy. But I never realized how I didn't feel and how I suppressed those feelings and how they were coming out and affecting my relationships, but also my day-to-day quality of life,
That's
I
right.
would say.
And I'd love for both of you to be able to speak to, if you could take a moment, just to be able to speak to what you just said is I lost access to, or they were removed from me. I lost access to my support systems, the things that I did have that I loved, that I cherished, that I cared about. Seemed to be removed or taken or something I didn't want to participate in anymore. Would you speak to that?
Well, since we're talking about how things are coming up, actually, this is something I'm working on right now, this week in therapy and with my therapist, that some of the things that were important to me when I first got married or was dating, I did horse stunts for movies and rode a lot and rodeoed. That was my a big
Part of your identity.
yeah, an identity, my identity and passion, and brought me joy. And I did have a, I bought a horse, and I have a horse, and I still have him 36 years later, and the love of my life. And I didn't ever give up on him. I never, my husband wanted me to sell him many times in our marriage and our relationship, and I wouldn't go that far. But he did separate me from, first I had to quit doing that job. And then I had to move from the barn that I had all the friends at and my brother at, to move to a where there was no barn environment, no people. It was just a pasture. To where he then started talking about how my family was weird, or it, what they did was inappropriate, or that was odd, or they shouldn't do that in public, or look at, would pinpoint, quirks with my family members. And so then I would start looking at them like, maybe they are, I don't want to be seen in public with them, or maybe we shouldn't be doing these things, or Or he would even punish me when we would do my family events. He wouldn't participate, family vacations, but we always had to participate in his family's because they were the healthy, fun things to do. Or point out how unhealthy or weird my friends were, or make things so hard for me, keeping me busy, having me do other things, so I couldn't have time to ride. Or financially he was a big control mechanism, like you're spending too much money on this, or you can't go do that because we don't have enough money.
Meanwhile.
Meanwhile, I found out, for example, when in the divorce process, my ex-husband owed $170,000 in debt on credit cards I didn't even know about. Our financial problems were not my problem, that they were his spending, but it was he would use me to blame and control. And so that was, as we said earlier, about the needs being met. My needs were the last financially to be met. And I ha still today have a hard time. I get my hair cut once a year. I rarely buy clothes for myself. I will sometimes skimp on what I'm having for dinner or meals. I don't even know it would be hard for me to. It's hard for me to spend money on myself. Like I said earlier too, this didn't happen overnight. But I did, after the fact, 25 years later, I'm like, I find myself now, I'm making up with my best friends. I'm reconnecting to a deeper relationship, back to that relationship with them or some of my family. But I also find it hard to socialize or to let people in, or go about that and to trust what they're, because I don't want to make the wrong decisions again. But
Process.
yeah, it
It's definitely a process. And I love how, like, when you share, as something that we do, when you shared and, like, processed your timeline, you can see the systematic approach to separating you and isolating you from people, places, and things that were important to you or would offer you a different perspective. And that's key, and that's one of the things we do look for in a timeline.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what was said a little earlier about the betrayed partner needs more help. And I would get up on a soapbox and preach that to the world because I think to me it feels like the model that we have for treating this situation is very askew and is very wrong, and it makes me quite angry. And I'm not saying that addicts don't need help. I mean, obviously they do, but I also think, that the partner is so neglected so much of the time. And many of these people with this disorder are narcissistic to begin with. My husband's a diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, and so all of a sudden they're the hubbub of all this treatment and everything they say. People are hanging on their words and trying to figure them out and help them, and you're just collapsing. You've been betrayed and you have nowhere to go. And I just think, like, the model should be that both partners need help, that the betrayed partner every bit as much as the addict, and also I think the addict already knows his world. He knows he's been betraying you. He knows he's been, having affairs, sleeping with prostitutes, whatever he's been doing. He knows that about himself. All that knowledge and, who you are, he knows who you are. He knows everything. He has access to all the information, hidden and otherwise. You don't. So when you fall down the pit of your husband's secret sexual basement, it's a new world to you, and you don't know you didn't know anything about it. I don't think most women who haven't, if you're a woman and you haven't gone through this, I call them civilians. You don't really understand what it's like to go through this. I know I didn't understand it before it happened to me. And I just wish that there were many more ways to help the woman in that, in those early days when you're just staggering around, in my case where it was like I didn't know this, just to help you orient yourself. You don't even know which side is up, and you're so just completely traumatized, and you lose everything. Like in my case, my husband, with his secret sexual world includes, homosexuality and transvestitism and some extreme fetishes. And, so it's like he was kind of outed from his closet to me for that. And, then I didn't, like I felt obligated. That was his private life. And I felt at the time, like then all of a sudden I had to keep someone else's secrets. And but I feel like the damage done to me for that was in very high, because it's like, you can't talk to people, and a lot of the counselors caution you, don't tell other people what's happened to you. Will be held against your husband. It may harm your marriage. And it's sort of like, how do you not tell people that your house was bombed last Tuesday? That you're sitting in a pile of wreckage. That a fire has swept through and destroyed everything that you love, and you're sitting there and you can't tell anybody that. And I know for me that it was like suggested, to not talk about it, and to other people outside of the situation. And I didn't have, really people to talk about on my own. I didn't know I needed to, but it's like you're stuck. You have no one to talk to. You don't know what is their secret versus your secret versus, and I just, you're holding it all in, and it's way too much.
That's even more, I think, damaging. And for someone to say to not talk about it, it's confirming, as there's the saying, secrets keep us makes us sick. It's the secrets that make us sick. And I think that as a betrayed partner, if you are a really good betrayed partner, you don't know you've been betrayed. And so
It's good.
your friend, your partner is getting help and getting treatment, or it's making aware. Why isn't the expert or the therapist saying, by the way, you need help because you've been betrayed?
Right.
So this is part of the recovery process. I'm going to separate you to the side because you automatically need a support system and help, because you're probably not even aware. And I, example, I just sitting here right now, it's hard for me to say that I was betrayed, that I'm a betrayed partner, and or what was done to me was wrong, and that I have involvement in it. And I admit that mine hasn't gotten recover is not in recovery, or does not admit that they have a problem of any sort. But I think that it takes someone else to kind of point out sometimes that if you are really the betrayed partner, that you've been betrayed.
Yeah, I didn't even know that it was abuse. Like, it took me
Exactly.
years to get to that point. And it seems unbelievable, that this kind of abuse is done, and it's not acknowledged as abuse. It's not seen as something that the partner needs help with. And once you've gone through it and you get your normal brain back, which takes a long time, years, I think for me, you start of going, hey, that was abuse to keep all these secrets from me and to lie to me and to gaslight me. And if I ever had a little, intuition about something and I asked you about it, you would just totally deny it. You learn to not trust your gut, not trust your own judgment. And that's a bad place for any human being to be in. It has negative survival value.
I really appreciate this conversation and highlighting the damage that is done and the recovery process that is necessary to heal and overcome it. I agree completely that when you're already neglected, sometimes for decades, and you're programmed to feel unsafe when you have needs. If you do walk into or happen into a program that tells you that your needs aren't important, if heaven forbid there are counselors in place telling you the same thing, please know that that is not accurate. And please be able to come back to this interview and say, no, I remember. I remember hearing not just how important it is for me to take my recovery seriously, but that it's sometimes, in some cases, even more important for me. I'm curious, at what point did you learn otherwise that this is trauma, this is abuse? And that your recovery is paramount.
That took a long time for me. I guess I saw that it was abuse when other women recounted their stories, and I became so angry just at the injustice of it, and just that so many of the women that this happens to are just, they're very compassionate, loving women, and they're the helpers of the world. And I didn't see it as abuse first for me. I saw it on behalf of other women that was clearly abuse. And that was the first time really that I knew. And then after a while, I was able to see that, well, if it was abuse for them, then it was abuse for me also. I had to see it through the eyes of other people first. And I don't know why that is, but it is so.
And I think it's because of, one of the things we find very common in betrayed partners is what you said. They're very loving, very compassionate, very kind, very nurturing, very loving, but also have this amazing justice sensitivity. Like they want things to be fair. They want things to be right. They want people to be considered and loved for who they are. And they weren't even aware that that wasn't happening in their own
Because you're giving.
home.
You're the giver and you give, and that seems normal to you. And you don't ask yourself, until you're much, much, much healthier, what about me? What about my needs? What about my life and my integrity and my feelings and my safety? And you have to even you have to be healthier to even understand that those are questions. And so it's kind of a paradox because you have to recover enough, you have to go through enough healing or hearing stories of other ladies to, and men, this happens to men too, to really ask to start and have a good therapist to start asking yourself the right, what I think of as the fundamental questions about what about your own safety? What about your own happiness? And what about not focusing on the needs of somebody who, yes, he's sick. Yes, he needs help. But what about you in this relationship? What about your happiness is important also, And it takes, for me, it took years and years to get to that point. I am a slow learner in that regard.
I think the recovery process is a reflection of the abuse endured. Okay. And also people's histories, because oftentimes they find, as things are revealed, that this intimacy betrayal in their current relationship was not the first intimacy betrayal. Could have been from a major caregiver, a boss, someone in a position of authority, but my goodness, there's oftentimes a lifetime leading up to this, and the recovery process will reflect that. Parting words.
I would, well, first, before I say some parting words, I wanted to go back to joke that my trauma superpower is I'm very aware of things. I see systems and business that I don't, that a lot of other people don't see. I'm very resilient. I have a very positive attitude. I always think that things can get better. You can fix things. I can control everything, which I can't. I'm learning, discovering that I can't control everything. So it's not 100%, you know, bad.
Amen to everything that you said. And, you know, I want to just say to all the people out there who, you know, are just finding out, or you're in hell basically, and you're in such a state of despair that you can't imagine that your life will ever be different or better, that there is real hope. And there may not be hope for your marriage, there may not be hope for your spouse, but there is real hope for you, and you have got to find it. And none of that is easy. I'm just thinking of the words of Winston Churchill, who said, you know, when you find yourself in hell, you have to keep on going. And that is the only way out of it. You know, you have to speak your truth. I think you have to find people who will help you. If you have to learn to trust your gut a little bit, and increasingly over time, as it proves itself valuable, you have to learn, you know, not how to be a soft place for predator to land, because often the people that seek you out are quite predatory, and you are the wounded gazelle, and they want to take you down because you're an easy target. And, you know, you can learn to overcome that. And my friend here mentioned earlier about betrayed partner superpowers, and I just think there's so much beauty in that, because, you know, when you're a betrayed partner, you have certain qualities in the world. Like you're very empathetic. You're very loving often. You're trusting. You want to be a good partner. It's often used against you by these predatory type people. But what you can learn to do is, it's almost like a martial art. You know, you take this malevolent energy and you learn to flip it, and you can flip it, and you can learn to become stronger and not fall prey to these people, and to give yourself some of that compassion and love that you so readily give to other people. And when you do, I think you're going to be invincible, because I think that, you know, you can learn to take all those qualities, internalize them, and become so strong that your life will be transformed. And I'm not there yet. I'm still totally in the process, but I can see that that is coming. I can see that light at the end of the tunnel, and just how my life has gotten better over all this pain and all these realizations. And everything you do will be a hard-earned truth and hard-earned wisdom. But you can take that, and you can have an amazing life, and the lives of your children can be better also, because you can teach them how to avoid predators and to trust their instincts and trust that little voice of truth that speaks within them. So I guess what I want to say is, you know, there is total hope for you. And having been through it, I have very high hopes for all of you out there who are going through this, because I know that this can ultimately make you stronger.
When we talk about betrayal trauma, we're talking about complex PTSD over decades. And at the very end of it is this amazing traumatic growth and strength and purpose and newfound commitment to self and authenticity. And that's why God knows I love this work. And I love being here with you and hearing again your stories, what you've been through and what you've worked to overcome. All right, guys, we'll see you same time, same place next week.
Does anyone else feel like they just earned an extra brain wrinkle? Do you feel like that went by way too fast and just cannot wait till the next episode? Then leave a review and share this episode with a friend, a loved one, a coworker, or whomever, because your valued feedback makes a direct impact.
Thank you for dropping in. Snaps to you, because you have made a direct impact by listening to this podcast. Make sure to follow us on social media and stay tuned every week for a new episode of Direct Impact with Andrea Epstein. Here is our disclaimer and legal language. Yes, I'm a psychotherapist, but guess what? I'm not your psychotherapist, and I need to be clear that this podcast is solely for enhancement, education, and entertainment purposes only. It is in absolutely no way a replacement for professional counseling services. If you feel like you need additional support, we strongly encourage you to seek that out today. All right, guys. Life can get hectic really fast. It feels like there's no time and we're always on the go. When you get overwhelmed with life's daily tasks, responsibilities, and unexpected challenges, important things like our health tend to fall to the wayside. Well, my friend, Healthy Cell is here to make taking care of yourself a priority. Healthy Cell makes getting back in the driver's seat much easier. They have an innovative approach to the pill format by using this awesome gel. This vitamin-packed, nutrient-dense gel can be taken by itself, mixed in your drink, or blended with your morning smoothie. Healthy Cell offers supplement packs to enhance your performance, focus, and well-being. Take control of your mental, physical, and physiological health with Healthy Cell. If this is something that you've been thinking about implementing, tap this episode, scroll to our show notes, and click the link for significant savings today. All right, click that link to support your health and our mission today. Now, enjoy the rest of the show. Hello. Hey there. Yeah, you. The one who's been consuming, absorbing, enjoying, and implementing our weekly content like a ravenous animal and can't wait to get more. We want to give you more of what you crave, so become a supporting member of the show and ensure that the content you hunger for is served fresh weekly. I know, it's free content and we love offering it, but it's not free to create, only to consume. So please consider our monthly membership offered through Patreon. Monthly membership includes access to useful life-enhancing PDFs with higher-level offerings in the works to include chats with Andrea, customized playlists, and more. Scroll down to our show notes and visit our website at www.lightninginabottle.biz/podcast. Visit us today and support the show.